Thank you very much, Chairman, and good morning to the honorable members, and good morning to the members of the media. I think what we, Chairman, I'm happy about first is the fact that we seem to be improving in terms of the documentation. I do hope that the Commissioner will take that into account, and again, whenever we have to engage with the honorable members, that members are not at a disadvantage. We get the documentation in time. I must thank the Commissioner for that, together with his team. We must push more and more that we improve on that. Just a few things. I will not be talking much because the presentation will be done by the team that the Commissioner has brought to yourself. Safe to say that they will be presenting to you, as you have correctly pointed out, the trend with regard to escapes in our centers, the security challenges and threats that correctional centers face all over the country and probably in other parts of the world, and what measures we are taking to reduce the escapes. In the same vein, say that there are some of those escapes and some of the procedures that have been taken by the department. Some of them are in front of the courts at the moment, and criminal cases are going on in some of the cases. So there might be also questions as to where some of those criminal cases are in front of the prosecuting authority. They will touch on that if there is a way, but some cases are difficult to track the minute they are within the criminal justice system. So it's difficult to track some of those. As we're building up towards the end of the year festive season, we kind of expect all the time that there will be more arrests that are made by the police, correctly so. So we try and make sure that we tighten our security measures around correctional centers. That's the time when also offenders, particularly awaiting trial and sentence offenders, try to escape. And therefore we've come up with the concept of Operation VALA, V-A-L-A, VALA, which means close up. At that time, we cut down on even the kinds of visits that would bring in illegal substances within the center. So we launch every year Operation VALA, where the minister will then determine and say, at this stage, we're now locking up and we're making sure that activities are not so much within the prison in terms of people visiting in and out. We don't allow radios to be brought in because we've had an incident where a radio was brought in and it had a weapon in it. So we don't allow a number of things to be brought into the center. So Operation VALA is one of those. And this year, Operation VALA will be done in Ebongweni, in Oxa. That's the maximum security. Commissioner will touch on that because we have already started moving, particularly those that we feel are dangerous criminals, to that center. One of them is this young criminal who's been sentenced to 16 life sentences plus 140 years. We've already moved him, the serial killer, already moved him to Coxa. And numbers are getting there. The logistical problems that have been around Coxa are being sorted out. And I'll be happy if the members of, led by the chairperson of the portfolio committee, will join us on the 27th of November when we do Operation VALA in Coxa, where we throw all those kinds of gangsters and criminals in there and fill up Coxa, because the logistics are now exactly as we wanted them to be in terms of the water, in terms of the electricity. So whatever we present you now, for us, it's a build-up towards that time when we close down on absolutely everything within our centers to make sure that security is stepped up and tightened as much as we can. But the team will go through that with yourself, and they will definitely touch on some security incidences, which again, sometimes are very difficult to touch on because they are also in front of the court. the courts are dealing with some of those incidences. Once we finish with our own internal investigation, then the criminal justice system takes over. They will touch on those things. I'll give over Chairperson to the Commissioner now to introduce his team, and they go straight into the presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. Thank you, Commissioner.
Honorable Chairperson, members of the Audit Committee. With me, I have the Chief Deputy Commissioner of Corrections, well known to you, Mr. Mutseki. I also have the Regional Commissioner for the Eastern Cape, Mr. Rengana, the Regional Commissioner for the Western Cape, Mr. Smallberger, the Deputy Commissioner responsible for remand detention, Mr. Damon, the Deputy Commissioner responsible for communication, Mr. Wodela is here. I also have Fadalo, who is known to you as part of the delegation, and Sintiwe Kako from the Deputy Minister's Office responsible for communication. The director in my office, Ms. Shabalala, is here as well. Chairperson, just in addition to the few starting to the neck of the bottle, he's hiding behind his laptop, I almost didn't see him. Chairperson, in addition to the few comments made by the Minister, please allow me, this is the first time that we officially at the DCS is engaging with the Portfolio Committee since we've heard about the untimely death of Ms. Nawa. Please allow me to, on behalf of the Department, extend our sincere condolences. We are also quite affected by a loss. The person who we will miss in this house for always having a smile on the face when asking us those difficult questions. So we really as surprised as the members of the committee about the untimely passing, and would like to just express our condolences as well. Chairperson, as articulated by the Minister, we've explained the framework, the approach, whilst the presentation that we've prepared focus on broad themes, we're also ready to respond to some of the details that you may have questions about without compromising, as the Minister has indicated, some of the criminal cases as well as the civil cases that emanate from some of these incidences that we have seen. But just a few further remarks, Jefferson, perhaps to draw attention to concern around the drawn-out processes around discipline, the long periods of suspension, and the perceptions of lack of consequences where there have been serious transgressions. I know that's a concern of the committee, something that we're constantly addressing. We are concerned about the regular postponement of cases, and in some cases also the poor handling of investigation. Quite clearly, we've done some introspection about this in itself and discovered that our own disciplinary procedure was at fault in the sense that we had a unique process within DCS different to the broader public service. We have found that I can report draw that in line with the public service, and one of the implications, for instance, is shortened time frame when certain things should happen. But more importantly, we've changed the appeal procedure to be a paper appeal procedure, whereas previously it had to have an appeal hearing. And already we're beginning to see for those cases that fall within that new amendment, we're able to move much faster, but unfortunately we're still dealing with a backlog. We're also saying that it's important, Chairperson, that we need to, as a security institution, continue to send very strong messages out. And just a few things that I need to point out here, we may not come to it in our presentation. You would have noticed that following the special assignment expose on what happened at Pretoria, I personally, with the Minister, viewed the tape prior to its screening. We identify the implicated officials, I called them in myself and I gave them the option to either resign or to be dismissed on the spot. Two of them opted to resign and three of them were dismissed on the spot. And I think that's the kind of message that we want to send. Secondly, Chairperson, we've also started with a process where we say that when an investigation happens, we tend to focus on the incident itself and the people immediately around that incident who can be identified. But these incidents often happen because of poor supervision and poor management responsibility. And we have said that with any investigation, there must be a reflection on the lack or otherwise of management accountability and responsibility. So that's the dimension that I've insisted must be brought into our investigation report. In fact, there is such an investigation currently underway following the Mpata incident by an external team to look essentially at the management challenges that may have given rise to that incident. We've also said, and we share your concerns here, that we intend to move from one security incident to the other. And for as long as there's some focus, we tend to respond to it, and as long as that focus has died down, we tend to forget about it. Now, we've started to change that. I have, while I was still the regional commissioner in Gauteng, introduced what I call a post-incident review mechanism, so that we, no matter how long after the incident, we send back a team from outside that area to go and assess the extent to which the recommendations flowing from the investigation has been addressed. And I'm quite pleased to say that it has brought a new kind of vigilance to the process of incidences and what needs to happen afterwards. Lastly, Chair System, I have to acknowledge that as a security institution, we will continuously be confronted with various security risks by the very nature of our business. We have to find ways of mitigating that through various efforts, and I think we will be reflecting on some of those efforts. But it remains of central concern, the exposure of our own personnel to some of the security breaches, the negligence that we have seen, the non-compliance and the collusion. And therefore, we cannot be soft on these issues. And whilst we are concerned about the issue of the number of people who face discipline, we will constantly ensure that there are consequences. In the same vein, those people, officials and colleagues who have been compromised, we continue to feel their pain as well. We've seen the loss of life of correctional officials, and it continues to hurt us when one of us also suffers because of negligence of others. I'm very happy to report to this committee that through the initiative of the Minister, he has written to the Minister of Finance to ask for permission to introduce a similar provision that is in the South African Police Services, where we as a department, we contribute an amount to the family if that person has died on duty. The Minister of Finance has since written to us to say that he is in full support of that initiative. And so whilst we think it is still a small gesture towards the family who has lost a loved one, we know that it can never make up for that loss, we believe it's just one way of acknowledging how sorry we are as a department. Chairperson, I'm going to immediately ask the Chief Deputy Commissioner and the team to, in the first instance, take us through the presentation and then subsequently perhaps just summarize for us again some of the high security incidences, and we are saying we're not only focusing on escape, there are also other incidences of the security nature. He will then summarize that in order to set us up for discussion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Commissioner, and the Minister, Honourable Chair, members. I'm going to ask Ms. Ramos to take us through the presentation, and I'll provide at the end a summary in respect of the major incidences that you have referred to in your request for appearance here today. But the presentation itself will not deal with that. I'll provide that summary for the end of the presentation or after someone is finished. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you, Minister, and honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. The purpose of this presentation is based on three critical areas: the trend analysis of escapes over 10 years as well as over the past 3 years for comparison purposes. We will address security challenges and threats facing the departments, as well as measures to reduce escapes. But we'd like to start with the security challenges and threats facing the departments. I think it's important to say that there's a changing profile of crime in the country. And in certain areas, there's an increase in certain crimes, and in other areas, there's a decrease. But trends that remain high involve sophisticated syndicates. That's now in our regions like Gauteng and the Western Cape specifically. And there's also the increase of unpredictable ICD population and an increase in our maximum security inmates. So what happens normally when the police introduce their cleaning operations? The net effect of that is that the ICDs end up in our system. And that is having an impact directly on the DCS system. And in fact, with the continuous serious crimes in the country, the classification, security classification of offenders is also then at risk. And there's also the trend of increase of maximum security offenders within our system. That's the violent and contact crimes remain steady. Now, other challenges in terms of infrastructure, as the honourable members visit the different regions and facilities, you observe that our facilities are quite old, the majority of it, and it really does not respond to the threat that's facing the escape threats within the system. And you will also observe when we present to you the analysis on escapes, that some of these escapes happen from inside our facilities. Offenders don't escape outside, but from inside facilities. There's an increase of the ICD population, and that in fact exposes us to vulnerability within our day-to-day operations. And the overcrowding of offenders, the figures will show that we are managing overcrowding, but the reduction is minute in terms of the population that we are currently incarcerated. In terms of the unsentenced population, we have a figure of 48,246. You see the maximum 28,000, medium 51,000, and minimum around 2,000. What is not included in the statistics are the short-term offenders, apparently because we don't classify them. Now, over the past 10 years, it's safe to say we have started with a figure of 1,244 SKPs in that particular year. And it was having a downward trend up to last year, where we end up with history in the figure of 130 only SKPs. And I think it's also important here to say that the prison population has also increased over this period. So the comparison between the two is a downward trend in terms of escapes, but the population of offenders has an increase in the population. Now what we have done with this slide, we are giving the escapes per calendar year on the one side and the escapes for the financial year on the other side. Looking at 2005-2006, for a trend, 120 offenders escaped compared to 130. And then we have taken the same period last year, 1 January
until 30 November, even though we are not to the end of this month, and we are comparing that to the same period of this year. So there is also a downward trend. Only 98 offenders escaped last year, while only 72 so far escaped in terms of calendar year. In terms of the financial year, there's also a downward trend, 204, 205, 171 offenders escaped, compared to 205, 206, 112, and then 206, 207, 94. And again, we have taken the same period over the financial year, 1st April 2006, the 30 November 2006, and this year, 1st April, the 30 November 2007, and you can also observe is an decrease in the figures again. So taking the same periods now, last year as well as this year, if the department continues with measures in place to prevent this case, we will again have a figure less than what we had last year. Now the escape trend generally, awaiting trial, in 204, 205, 89 escapes, in 205, 206, 63, 206, 207, 46. If we take the maximums, 15 escape, 205, 204, 205. In 205, 206 maximums, only 3 escape, and in 206, 207, 6. The medium category, 66 escape, 204, 205. 45 to 05 to 06 and 06 to 07 42, and then a small figure for minimum classified offenders who escaped over that period. That remains low. Escape time, the area of escape. What is important here is to observe that from correctional centers, as we set out, we look at these practices out. And infrastructure does not meet the challenges that we are facing. The majority of offenders, unsentenced and sentenced, escape from correctional centers. And then, from work teams, permanent members is also a significant figure. Permanent members have to take on pen duties. That's for agriculture, cleanup services around the facilities. And the last number of pen going out on a daily basis. From work teams, temporary members, there's people taking offenders out on a daily basis, there's also a figure. And from public hospitals, there's quite a large number of offenders escaping from public hospitals. From courts, very low number, as well as during escort. Over this period, the trend, there's a downward trend as we observe the graph. Measures to reduce escapes. Having looked at the trend analysis, the department has introduced a variety of measures to curb escapes because we are having a saying of we should not have any escapes whatsoever from our facilities. And therefore, we even introduced stringent measures to curb further escapes. There's a general intolerance with the executive and the managers within the department, the minister, towards negligence commissioned by officials, with an example that we have listed there, instant dismissal of special assignments reported. There's also other reports where immediate steps were taken by the department. Then we hand over these cases also where there's elements, criminal elements, to the SAPS for investigation. And we improve our sharing of information between different security agents like NIA, Crime Intelligence, the police, and we have established a task team that share this information with other agencies. Vetting of staff is a business process analysis by NIA, and we are also in this establishing field vetting units to vet our officials. Those working in the risk areas of maximum security, as well as ATD, we have listed the officials and we have started the vet process. Measures to reduce escapes, there's an increase of the
DIU, the Departmental Investigation Unit, of profiling high profile incidents, instead of management areas investigating them. So the DIU from National Office, independent body, becomes involved and they investigate then the high profile incidents. Security technology that we apply, the image tracking, video postponement and the integrated security systems. So the technology that we apply, we have developed now a technology strategy with the assistance of CSIR to advise the department how to improve on the security technology facilities that we are introducing to the department. The area that we want to highlight is Operation Vala. Now the Minister has introduced largely Operation Vala, while we also had previously a program in place to prevent escape over the festive or specific event. Now with the launch, we have compared the information that we had with the announcement of the Minister for last year. And the observation that we have made is there is a significant decrease of all the different incidents after the announcement of the Minister, Operation Vala in the Eastern Cape. So we have that statistics available. And again, with Operation Vala, this year on the 27th of November, we will monitor the type and kinds of incidents over the same period that the Minister has announced last year, to not only to monitor, but to implement intervention measures. Now, this year the launch will take place on the 27th of November at Kofstad Egoli Kweni, the maximum facility. And the purpose of Operation Vala is, we have listed a few, the special and tightened security actions by all the magnitude areas around the country. Drastic enhancement of security at access control points so that we monitor who's moving in and out of our facilities and have control over who's coming in and moving out. Confinement of high-risk inmates and minimizing of their movement. So during the announcement and after the announcement, there's minimal movement that's taking place around all our different facilities in the country. And we tighten up security in general. Now, as part of this process of filling up Ebong Kweni, transfer and incarceration of long-term risk inmates, we are now busy process transferring 200 to Ebong Kweni. And what we have considered as the department, we would want to identify and implement facilities around the country for specifically these high-risk inmates, so that the different regions can deal with high-risk offenders themselves, and not sending these offenders, all of them, around the country to Ebongweni. But there source should be a small unit in every region that can deal with high-risk inmates, and we want to establish that. Now, filling up of Ebongweni, this is criteria where decided on a criteria for offenders before we could transfer them to Ebong Kweni. And we have listed the criteria that we have applied. There's a selection criteria that we have applied before we have transferred all the different offenders to Ebong Kweni. Murder with aggravating circumstances, prisoners declared dangerous by the court, prisoners sentenced for acts of terrorism, serious sexual offences involving life-threatening levels of violence. This includes gang rape and sexual offences against children, offences of armed robbery involving life-threatening levels of violence or which resulted in loss of life or disability, murder with... The last bullet there where the prosecuting authorities have indicated that the offender is a member of a well-resourced criminal gang, prepared to use extreme violence or firearms in an escape attempt. And out of the 100, we have look at the criteria and that make the summary of the offenders that will be transferred over this period before the 15th of November to Ebongweni. There's murder 130. And in many of these cases, when we look at the crimes of these offenders, there's multiple offenses. So it's not one murder. It can be two, three, four murders of an offender. But just to categorize it, to make sense out of the information, we have summarized who will then be transferred to Ebongweni. Rape, even rape, multiple cases, robbery, there's one escape, but not only the escape, there's also other offenses committed. And then assault intentional, also a series of these assaults, that makes up the total of 200 that will eventually be transferred to Ebongweni. As we speak here, it was reported to me that 97 has already been sent to Ebongweni, and before the end of the week, I think tomorrow there will again be 35 transfers, so that we end up with this figure. The facility in Ebongweni experiences some challenges in terms of water supply, in terms of sewage, and sometimes electricity and maintenance. For that, we have established a steering committee that works with Public Works and assigns certain contracts, maintenance contracts. So some of these contracts will, before the end of this financial year, come into place so that we end up with a situation where we can fill up Ebongweni to its full capacity. Those contracts are being negotiated, and the steering committee works with Public Works to sign these agreements. So the situation is monitored, and we will be in a position to report correctly on that after every contract has been signed. Thank you, Jeff.
That's a comment that you make. If people were selling to Ebongweni, I want them not to be clear about this. Are what I would call people who have no chance of being rehabilitated. Absolutely no chance. And there's no rehabilitation at Ebongweni. And we want Ebongweni to remain like that. We send you there without any option of anything, just to lock you up, and you stay there as long as we can keep you there. End of the story.
Now, thanks, Chairperson. I just, honourable members, want to run through the specific cases that we have requested an update on. The six or seven specific cases. The first of this is Krugersdorp. You remember that in the case of Krugersdorp, what reported and the subsequent to which was in this case was that there was a gang fight in the specific facility where our staff members reacted. So you will bear with me in choosing the words in the manner that I do, because I cannot make an admission of any kind in this specific case in the event this thing has got incriminating implications for the criminal cases. Our staff reacted and three inmates were involved, alleged involved, died. The investigation, our own internal investigation, was finalized on the 23rd of April. Nine officials were recommended for discipline. But there has been postponement in that specific case. Approximately three incidents of postponement of the hearing. At the moment that I'm speaking with you, the hearing is scheduled for the 4th of December. One specific case in that regard of the nine officials has been finalized. And an official implicated has been given final written. The case of Ananias Mate, where an escape by Ananias Mate took place on the 18th of November 2006. You remember the detail of the investigation as a result of the minister's intervention, the multidisciplinary task team. Parallel by our own internal disciplinary investigation as per the procedures relevant in the event disciplinary measures has to be taken against an individual. Those were finalized on the 22nd of March 2007. The case has been postponed once. It's scheduled for the city on the 27th of November, next before the week of the next. I'll give you that number, that's not second. If you can help me, nine officials with a tennis center. The case of Leo Cox. Mr. Diamond has already talked about the trend of this case, that the majority of this case, especially around the medium category inmates, happens when they go into the fence, when they go outside and work. Now, in the specific case, inmates were going outside to go and work. One inmate saw fit to actually and attempt an escape. The investigation in respect of that specific case was finalized on the 7th of August 2007, and the hearing will commence on the 21st of this month. The case about Donna Badgers, remember the incident of the 6th of November 2005, which I think we reported to this house sometimes in 2006, where the details that we provided there was that allegedly a gun was put into a radio, you remember the case, and that gun was used in an attempt to escape where inmates held some of our transportation on their way to free the vicinity. The investigation in that regard was finalized in December 2005. 8 officials were recommended for hearing. There was not sufficient evidence with regard to 3 of the 8. 2 received final written warning. 3 were reprimanded. And 1 hearing has not been completed because the official has been in and out of hospital. And then in the case of Fortescue and Shepherdson, where, as you know, an inmate who was allegedly sick was taken to Fortescue Hospital by a very well-trained team of our staff. At the time they arrived at the hospital, suddenly, there were gun shootings all around. Clearly, knowing that it was the hardest inmate, was accordingly surrounded by the staff that were confident that they would be able to manage the situation. The investigations are still ongoing. And as you have reported to yourself, Chair, there is a litigation against the department in respect of that case. And what I can say in respect of that now is that disciplinary measures were taken against some of the staff members with respect to that specific case. I may not be able to proceed any further than that. The case of Metal Drift, which was also well publicized, you remember that it involved a escape of very high profile offenders out of that facility. The investigations were finalized on August 2006 with recommendations that 4 officials should be charged. 1 official in that respect was dismissed. 1 was demoted from his level title. And because of absence of evidence, a case were withdrawn against 2 officials in that specific case. You will know, Chair, that your committee went to Middle Ridge and raised concerns which, in our response to the concerns and the report of the committee, we have declassified Middle Ridge. And a substantial number of the inmates that were held when Middle Ridge was classified that the maximum facility has been moved to different facilities, and some of them are those that will be moved or has already been moved to Portugal. And then in the case, the last case, Chabertino Pagan, was, you remember that it involved an incident that affected two nurses today. The investigations were finalized on the 20th of May 2005. One official was dismissed in respect of the other, where the investigations were completed and the official dismissed. That case is still pending an appeal by that from that official. Three of the officials have received a verbal warning, and one was acquitted. I think in general, those are the details in respect of those specific cases. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So that concludes our initial presentation, and it's over to you.
Thank you very much, Commissioner and Minister. There's a lot of questions. Obviously, we are going to ask questions about this presentation. But I'm going to open the floor to members, and then members can ask questions. But before members, I want the department to prepare themselves on this one. Krugersdorp 9, when did this thing happen? And how long is this people on suspension? You see, why I'm raising this, in our public hearing, Kokru raised an issue. We want to understand the length of people on suspension. Kokru raised the issue of people are sitting on suspension for more than 2.5 years. I want the department to break up this suspension, so that they must tell us. The other one, we must also get clarity on this issue of Martin. You have said there was 15. The initial number of people that were, when you reported to us, was 15 members that were suspended. Now I see 9. Clarity on that. You understand? That's why I'm saying I'm preparing you. Not a question, but I'm preparing for that. The closest skill issue as well. More clarity. You are saying ongoing. I want to. You must break down all these issues, please. Then I see and Mr. Maote, Bishop Tolo, Nkosi Tolo, and Cindy, and Mr. Self, and May Mama Rashad.
Thank you, Chaka. The Commissioner has passed on the issue of the officials and the letter representing by the Minister. I appreciate that, and I applaud the Minister for taking care of our officials. Chapter 3, my question is about, it's linked to what the Commissioner has said, it's about cases of officials who die in the line of duty, killed by inmates. I also need a response on those. What happens to the inmates that do those tests? The second question is about the funding applied about FP10. The presenter there mentioned about temp. What does he mean? Can you elaborate? Do they hire temporary people to take inmates out? I need an explanation on that. Therefore, it's just on the issue of the doctor. so I'm not going to ask that. Thanks.
Thanks,
Mr. Hong,
Bishop Jordan.
Yeah.
You know, my question is that if I'm not wrong, I remember in West Southeast Asian Eastern Chain, where there were one of officials, she's a woman, and she was pregnant with the I just want to know how far the case was that lady. Because, you know, last time I was talking like a kid in the show, but if somebody inside the prison is an official and then he sleeps with some prisoners there, and let me tell you something, all those prisoners that they look at each other, and let me say, those are the kind of problems according to me. And you must know, every prisoner went up. You know, yesterday I was speaking the TV, I mean, in the radio, we were talking about Martin. This morning also, they said the case of Martin, but next year, maybe she should apply. You know, always, we pulling her, letting her go. But these people who help the dangerous offenders, we don't know, you know. We must also, everyone, like in the media also, we must know how far the case of those kind of people. We must know. Like when I say this man, we don't know or she get a pay or not. We don't even know if she's in prison or what. You know, we must know. We must know what's going on. Not with the portfolio committee, but I say how far we can follow up. The president, the point raised from Minister is very important to say now.
I just raised this point of Bishop, you will continue. She was suspended. This woman was suspended that had a relationship and got pregnant by an inmate. That is the issue that Bishop Yolo. So yeah. Ministers in the Eastern Cape. So we just want Bishop is right. We want also report back on that
Thank you very much, Mr. You know, I want to say the point raised from Minister is very important when you are saying some of those who could be problem in prison, the police are hating with them. Very, very important about those kinds of things. So to know it's very, very, very important. And we know that our officials or members in the country, we've got a very and you remember in where there were two our members here. You know, you can see there is a people who do their work strong, but there is some other criminals who work with these criminals in the prison. That's why what you do is those people are danger and they are danger. They are killers. So if somebody rape and kill, an innocent child is going to get help to escape. Which means you have this man and woman. Which means you are also a king. Because when it goes outside, it's going to raise again and kill again. Now, I think it's very important, Shepherd, that also you must know, every now and then, I must tell all about this. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop. You get another fight again. And that year,
thank you, Chairperson. We appreciate the downward trend that we see from this report of escapees from prison. But I want to know, is there any mechanism that is being used so that the department ends this downward trend, or how does it happen? Secondly, the minister has spoken about the Kokstad prison that once you are taken there, you are just being kept there until first time. I'm worried about this Mohammed Shala case, Mr. Chairperson. Doesn't he belong to Kokstad right now?
Yes,
I think his behavior caused that. He should be taken there too. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the President. My question is, Chairperson, awaiting child versus overcrowding. And how are the cases of juveniles at the moment? Are they being tried and released, or are they still kept over the time period that they're supposed to be staying in prison? And then also on the escapees, Chairperson, what are the further sentences when they are apprehended again? And the other question is security measures. Is there any shortage of manpower, women's power in our prisons? Or what is really causing the problem of people getting away from jail? Thank you very much.
Thank the department for the presentation, and of course we appreciate the fact that the trends are declining and that is important. Then on the measures which the department says is taking to reduce escapes, there is no mention of the training of the new recruits and the inclusion of subjects such as issues or professionalism in the curriculum. And when we visited the colleges, really we were concerned about the curriculum for the BCS and even the length of time allocated for theory. And as far as I'm concerned, and when a person is being recruited, she or he is like a blank paper and you write whatever that you want. And if the emphasis is put on the fact that escape are regarded at face value as acts of negligence, which are punishable, their omissions, they are looked at as malpractice and unprofessionalism. And as such, they should not happen, and any person remains accountable for the act omissions and commissions that happen during the time of duty. I should think probably we would see lesser and lesser collusion, as mentioned by the commissioner himself, that there is an element of collusion between those that escape and the officials. But I don't see any emphasis on that. And in fact, I don't think there is any emphasis on the colleges in any of the documents of the department, including the annual report. I'm not very sure as to whether it's seen as a by the way thing. Yet I think it's an important aspect that can assist in the prevention of some of these things. I just want to check with the department as to whether it regards the training important to be, if it is important for the curriculum to include such subjects so that maybe we can see the reduction of this. But further, Chairperson, one is interested also to know about the extent and the level of training which is available to the officials of the CS that are in practice now. In terms of in-service training and so on and so forth, whether these issues form part of the programs of in-service education that takes place in DCS. And also to present on the issue of escape, one is interested to know as to whether the disciplinary measures that have taken place have impact in the reduction of the case. Can we say there is indeed a relationship that these estates are declining because of the measures that are being taken as far as disciplinary measures? And lastly, Chairperson, I would have expected, it's unfortunate that I cannot see from my paper because it's not canon. Personally, I would have expected that we don't have many escapes from those that have serving minimum sentences. Probably it's my own ignorance, I don't know. Minimum sentences and even medium sentences, but it would seem like there are many of those. And what could be the answer? You'd have expected that the person who's serving, you know, a sentence in line would probably want to serve it and leave. And lastly, the person, indeed, it is true that many people escape from public hospitals. And I just want to know as to what is the department doing about understanding the problem of shortage of staff, but of course the fact that maybe they are looked upon by the police, I don't know. But indeed, if from a point of experience, when they are in hospitals, it's very easy for them to escape, very easy. Even those that do not escape, they don't escape because they don't want to. But not because it would be difficult for them to escape, because the police will sleep and the patient will not be asleep sometimes. And there is nothing that a patient can prevent them from escaping, as far as I know. Even the hardened criminals, they are not chained. They go to theater, they come back, if they are to be operated upon, and nothing more happens, they wake up, anything is possible. So I don't know as to whether there are measures that can be put in place to ensure that these people do not escape, particularly from hospitals.
Thank you very much. But before that, Ms. Sitton, welcome.
Thank you.
Winingwenya, welcome. You were sick last week. I'm happy. That's why I'm smiling when you came into the door. Thank you very much that you are here. Thank you very much, Mr. Dell.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I have three questions. The first is a very simple one, and that is after the transfer the 200 people to Ebongweni, what will that mean for the capacity of that particular institution? How many vacancies will then be available in that facility once those 200 people are transferred? The second question that I have relates to the presentation, and mention is then made there of the establishment of DCS field vetting unit. Now we've received briefings about this in the past on several occasions, and I'd just like to know what precise progress has been made in this respect. How many people are in a position now to be vetted? What still needs to be done to ensure that the officials of the department can be vetted not only on a once-off basis, but on a continuous basis, so as to ensure that one is always in contact with trends which the presenter refers. The third question I have relates to a question that Bishop Toro put, and that is, he made the very valid point that those people who conspire with dangerous inmates to escape are themselves co-responsible for the offences that then get committed by those people. And I wanted to know the department's reaction whether it's possible to actually make the officials who conspire deliberately with inmates to escape, to make those officials co-responsible for the crimes that are committed by those inmates after their premature release. In other words, it would seem to me that you've got a collusion there, and therefore a co-responsibility for the for what happens, or for the crimes that that inmate commits. So, for example, Mr. Marte, when he escaped, I think went on to commit 58 or so criminal acts, while he was on the run. And, you know, the officials who conspired to make that possible ought to take co-responsibility for those crimes. I'd just like a comment on that.
That's also yes, it's a question, but on that one, and all the other escapes, we must also ask the question that Ms. Rajpali, it's not a one-sided thing that, yes, these officials have assisted, alleged have assisted, but what is the other factor that led to this escape? We must also go into that area. Ms. Rajpali asked about shortage of staff. The commissioner raised an issue about responsibility of managers. Where are we leaving out the managers? We are dealing with the foot soldier, Mr. Dell. We are dealing with the foot soldier. But we are not dealing with the person who must take responsibility. And it's the manager. Because these people are working under him. I mean, let's take that into consideration when we are dealing with such an issue. There is different problems that led to an escape. But over to you, Minister.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. With your permission, I, having heard that Mr. Charlie is leaving us early, I wonder if I can't respond to that question, sir. The specific question around ACP and cases of young offenders, the juveniles, are they being tried and are they being released? Just perhaps to respond very briefly to say that, yes, indeed, the Department of Correctional Services is working closely with the Department of Social Development to ensure that young people who have been arrested for certain categories of crime are diverted from our correctional facilities or from police cells and placed under the supervision where possible of the parents. Where that cannot be the case, then unfortunately some of these young people are being kept in our facilities. I need to state that in many cases they have committed very serious offences, including murder and rape. Of course, you would also know that part of the program of government is to develop additional capacity for secure care centres where these children should be kept rather than in correctional facilities. That process is moving quite slowly, so that what the net effect of the reduction is actually quite negligible. We still have the numbers that we have had since we started with this process. It's not going up radically, and neither is it going down. Our interventions are just helping us to keep it stable. Two things. The first thing I need to say is that obviously we're all anxiously awaiting the passing of the Child Justice Bill, that will expand the number of, on the one hand, the number of diversionary options for young people, but on the other hand, also make it increasingly difficult to keep awaiting child children at correctional facilities and police cells, and we are also working in preparation for that possibility. What is causing the problem for people to escape? I think we've kind of highlighted a number of issues. And this question also links up to, I think, the question that Ms. Chikunga was asking earlier about minimum and medium inmates escaping, and they seem surprised about that fact. And perhaps just to start there, to say that minimum and medium inmates are often used quite extensively, firstly to participate in development programs and also work activity outside of our facility, so-called work stands on the farms and so on. So quite clearly the opportunity there is much more for them to escape. So that's one factor that contributes to a higher level of escape sometimes. I think we'd be quite concerned because we don't want to drive down escape, and in by so doing, rather to say that there will never be an escape, and by so doing, constrain our own efforts to rehabilitate, because it doesn't help us much, Jefferson, if our people cannot participate in programs that will help them to reintegrate back into society and to develop certain job skills. So that is a difficult issue, and I would be the last person to say, let's reduce rehabilitation or development programs because we're too afraid of people running away. There will be a risk. We need to make sure that the adequate staffing is available in order to guard those things. So that's one problem. We've also seen, quite surprisingly, that people who are serving the last few days or weeks before they are released also tend to escape. And when they come back, surprisingly, they tell us, no, they know that they were going to go out, but in fact it's that idea of going out that made them to escape in the hope of coming back. The point being that many of our inmates are quite institutionalized, and the possibility of living life outside is quite a daunting one. And so for some, that is an option of coming back into our facility. It's a debate on its own, but I think ultimately... Jefferson, nice is a very relative word, I should say. I think quite clearly, for some of us, the idea of having to be outside and find that our family has been alienated from us, find that they have no support system, find that they can't find a job. It's that institutionalization that really means that some people can only live in institutions. And perhaps, for me to say quite sharply, that in the first place, we should use imprisonment very cautiously. Because we still know, and we've heard during the many briefings, that there's no prognosis for rehabilitation, and we shouldn't fool ourselves about that. Prisons are not meant to help people to rehabilitate, certainly the ones that we've inherited. So we should be quite realistic, and therefore the challenge of seriously expanding non-custodial options to keep people out of our jail for as long as possible is something that I'm totally committed to. There are a range of other reasons. I think we've made our own analysis of why certain security risks are within the system. Sometimes we know it's people. We have debated issues such as the lack of training, Ms. Chikunga. Perhaps just to respond to that issue, security training is a module in our basic training. So from the outset, our officers are trained. Of course, the question is whether there's regular updating and whether there's any specialized training. In terms of those two, I can just say that we have indeed commenced with training for emergency support teams who are specialists in the area of security and in certain instances where they have to react promptly. But also regular updating and briefing. I know regions are also initiating various such activities in Gauteng. Again, one of the things that I did while I was our regional commissioner was to introduce a security forum where you begin to get managers, junior, middle managers together to assess and discuss the kinds of security breaches and challenges, and in that manner to learn from each other. We've, apart from the issue of people, we've also said technology is an area that we have to address, and you will know you have voted our budget where we have, over the 3 years of the MTF, budgeted 300 million to improve our technology in order to enhance security. Poor technology obviously contribute to the smuggling of contraband and weapons, and we have been focusing on that as well. The issue of physical deterrence, whether through our initiative to improve fencing around our facilities. Again, I think the Deputy Commissioner Darmons can give us specific information about that initiative. Also, the movement, apart from the stand, the continued movement of our inmates, whether that's to courts or to hospital, also presents a risk. We have variously raised the issue of people escaping from hospitals. We do know that the numbers required to guard inmates while at hospital often makes it quite difficult to have that requisite numbers, especially where there are more than one person being moved to hospitals. The question about what we can do about it, obviously the best would be for us to have our own hospital so that people don't have to move outside our facilities to attend public hospitals. Because when they do so, there's always the possibility of some people being waiting there for them in order to jump these people as they come into hospital. Indeed, we have so far in some instances increased the number of medical doctors in order to limit the movement of inmates for some of those illnesses that they've complained about, and we've seen that making a difference. In Johannesburg, we've started to negotiate to have a separate section so that we can have our own people guarding inmates. So a variety of interventions when it comes to people escaping from the hospital. People escaping from the courts, you know, the number, hundreds, thousands of people moving on a daily basis between our correctional facilities and the courts. Again, we have briefed this committee about interventions to limit that movement. The introduction of video postponement indeed is an attempt to have the magistrate or the judge have the person appear before him at the facility whilst on video to manage at least the postponement. We know we can't do it for trials, but certainly that limits the number of postponements. So, Ms. Rosali, that's also the causes. I hope I've given some analysis. And I'm sure we can be kept busy on this issue for quite some time. You've also asked the question about what happens to people who have escaped once they return. I would imagine your concern is indeed we do have disciplinary processes for inmates themselves, and they are, if they're found guilty, there are certain measures that we have at our disposal to either extend their periods of imprisonment, you know, beyond the initial sentence. These are quasi-judicial processes, so we take it quite seriously. So I thought I'll just start at that point, and I hope I've covered you with your question. Chairperson, I'm going to ask my colleagues to come in responding to some of the specifics. I'm sure they have more time to research the answers from the documentation. In some cases, I need to be quite clear, we may not be able to give you specifics, and we may want to ask for your permission to obtain that either whilst you are here and ask officials to feel free to leave to get additional information so that we can engage as fully as possible. But on the issue of Krugersdorp, Chairperson, when you've asked the question, when it happened and how long these people have been on suspension, and obviously the concern raised by labor in this regard. You would recall that the Krugersdorp incident happened on the 15th of April 2007. I have different dates in terms of my list of information for suspensions at Krugersdorp, but considering that the incident happened on the 15th of April, I have a number of people who were suspended on the 17th, 23rd, and the 22nd of April, including the 17th of April and the 23rd of April. I would imagine that as from, if we use April as the month from when the Kruger's Law people either on the first day when they identify the initial officials who were implicated, and then the subsequent day on the 23rd, then further officials as they continued with the investigation. As you know, the investigation was finalized on the 23rd of April. So all intents and purposes, these officials were suspended as from the 23rd, and others prior to that as from the 17th. The cost of suspension, just to give you the cost for one official, the official who was suspended on the 23rd of April, the cost there amounts to 62,000 rand salary that a person continued to receive. The person who was suspended on the 17th, the cost amounted to 48,009 rand, and the difference merely being the level at which the person has been appointed. So if you add, if you consider that we're talking about 10 officials here who are involved, then the amount could be quite substantive. I think I have an estimate here of 559,814 rand. And I think two of these cases doesn't relate to the actual incident that we're referring to, arising from the alleged gang fight and the death of three inmates. Only for Kruger's Dorp, we're talking about 559,814 estimates. So quite clearly it comes at a cost. The first prize is to, of course, finalize the investigations quite promptly, but also the longer it takes, the greater the possibility of all kinds of evidence losing its value, and it's actually worse often in the interest of those who are implicated. And so they take to as a tactic, and yeah, but also implicate labor and the representatives as a tactic. They prolong the hearing, often leading to postponement after postponement after postponement. Unfortunately, that happened. The second issue that we as a department particularly face, as frustrating as it is, you would wonder why don't we just allow these people to continue to work while the processes continue. And here, it's a legal issue. Which makes it quite difficult. But often, in cases of serious transgression, you would have the department call for dismissal. And the basis of that is not only the guilt, but also the fact that the trust relationship has been broken down. Now, in situations where you suspend someone and bring that person back, you kind of shoot yourself in the foot by saying that the trust relationship indeed has not broken down. And so you're caught between the devil and the deep sea. Either you keep them on suspension and allow the process to take its course, or you compromise the ultimate finding where you're then compelled to have some of these often people who may have been found to be corrupt or really have committed serious offences. I'm sure you may want to come back to that issue in part, Chairperson. I must confess, Mr. Bloom, that your specific question on the number of people who were initially suspended at Pretoria, having this 50, and now we report that it's 9, I must confess that the detail eludes me at the moment in terms of the actual number who were suspended initially. Having been there, I seem to be also, apart from what is in the document, recorded, as we've always spoken about 9 people, but I could be wrong. So if you could just allow me to just recheck that. I don't know, I've spoken quite a bit. Maybe one of my colleagues may want to pick up and I'll come back where they've not covered. but Mr. Masiki, Mr. Dalmon, the regional commissioners, why don't you come in and I'll come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just come in with a short one, answering Bishop Tolu on the issue of an official who had slept with an offender? That official was dismissed. She did appeal, and the dismissal was still upheld, so she is dismissed. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you. I want to talk to the attempt in the car. The department allows that civilians can guard a small group of offenders in the minimum category to work for their own use, cleaning up. The police are making use of that to clean their facilities and buildings. And we refer to them as temporary warders, temporary officials. Just for that purpose, so that we don't utilize a permanent member to go and clean up police stations. And the police are responsible for those temporary officials, and they are being sworn in for that specific purpose, to do some cleanup duties for the police and justice departments. The downward trend in escapes, I think, there is different factors that can be contributing factors. In our analysis, the disciplinary measures is not one as a deterrent, but there are also the security systems that we are applying and implement that's also assisting the prevention of escapes. There's a variety of contributing factors on why offenders are escaping. And the measures that we introduce is a national escape prevention plan, where the regions also introduce their own regional escape prevention plans and list in all the different measures that the different levels of responsibility have to implement. And we are revisiting annually our national operation, national escape prevention plans, as well as the regional escape prevention plans, to tighten up the different measures. Now, the hospital escapes, the significant number in people escaping from hospital, one of the measures that we have introduced is that two officials should escort offenders to different hospitals. But even having said that, the exposure within the community, people are being assisted by gunpoint to escape, because it's an open society outside the hospital situation. And that's some of the factors that contributes to the offenders escaping from hospitals. But for the waiting time detainees, as well as maximums, who have to go to hospital occasionally, the direction is clear. Two officials should guard them in these hospitals. The question on the Ebongweni and the available space after the 200 have been transferred, there will be approximately 1,000 bed spaces. But I was told by the management they are having a program that divides, that's being divided into three phases. So we can't fill it already at once with full capacity. Offenders have to go through the different phases and progress through the different phases. So there will be, we have to allow some space for that improvement in terms of attaining programs. But some of the offenders will stay in one phase for longer period than other offenders. And while we are signing contracts with public works, or public works signing contracts with private entities, that process has to be finalized in the next 6 months. That's in terms of maintenance contracts and water supply. We have requested a feasibility study, not only to build another reservoir at the facility, By doing a proper feasibility study, the water supply to Ebongweni does not affect only these areas. It's having an effect on our town. And we requested a complete feasibility study on that to assist us. I was told by the management that Ebongweni is in a dry season. Even now, after the snowfalls in that area, the dams are remaining very low. So that needs to be investigated properly before we fill Ebongweni again up to its full capacity.
Mr. Damon, you are raising the issue of the reservoir, saying that you want a feasibility study. We were told when we were there, work will start in November. I'm having documentation. Now, if you are saying there is going to be a feasibility study, those people, the area committee said to us, they are going to start, everything is finalized, they are going to start building the reservoir now in November. We are in November.
Chairperson, if I can respond. The reservoir is part of the implementation process to build one. But I was told that we need to look for alternatives like boreholes. The supply of water to the whole town is being affected by the dam levels. So in the event that there is dry season, there won't be water in the reservoir either. So we said, hold the reservoir, but continue with a complete feasibility study so that we sustain the water system. Yeah, it's part of the feasibility study.
Now, I guess the person, the decision to transfer responsibilities around rating from one government department to the other one was taken by cabinet in the course of this financial year, and all departments are entirely dependent on the NIA for assistance in respect of the implementation of that specific decision. And so if we were to do this share ourselves, we had a pre-information about what capacity we wanted, and we left only after we met with them that we could very easily have made mistakes, being over zealous about rating and not having run the processes that will otherwise have been required. In consultation with the NIA, there is a process in the Department of Business Process Analysis. We should make a determination about which areas of our operations require people to be vetted. We ourselves, left alone, will have vetted everybody in irrespective perhaps of whether or not that is important. And so that work is underway. But already they have given us an agreement around the proposal we had on the structure. The Commission has given an instruction. This record started in September, as I'm thinking about the business process analysis. The Commission has given an instruction that our HR must prioritize the implementation of that, including the recruitment process. As a fact of which, the problem taking actual people, but there's going to be a training requirement before people start and so on. That is one thing. I don't know, Chair, if we are in a position ourselves to make a predetermination about whether or not people are co-conspirators per se. If that, well, the decision ultimately about the guilt of the person is determined by the court. And if the court draws in an inference that a specific people was co-responsible, that decision will be made. I don't know if the Department of Correctional Services per se can in some way then force people to be charged whether or not there is a direct link between a crime committed elsewhere and then they're being allegedly colluded in the escape of that. So it's a very difficult area to make a determination about. But I think Commissioner has indicated our resolve where evidence is clear and there is a direct link between that of collision. That stringent measures will be taken, and if need be, will be dismissed immediately after the specific incident. Mr. Mahanda Khanna is in the Mangaung correctional facility, which for all intents and purposes meet the same set of requirements. People who go there are maximum classified inmates in the same way as people that would go as Foxstar. So the end results for us are the same about whether it's Mangaung or Foxstar. The only thing that Mangaung is private and Foxstar is private by ourselves, but both of them will change exactly for the same kind of inmates. I think Commissioner has answered. I really had wished to leave the question about the issue of time on this issue to respond.
Chair, I may just pick up on that question. Mr. Mawati asking what happens to officials who are killed in the hands of inmates. To say firstly, there are the criminal cases that we have that impact the incident, but also the internal processes of DCS to deal with the discipline within the facility. So as far as possible, we do follow those two processes. The court always deals with matters of such criminal nature, irrespective of whether it happens outside or within our facility. Of course, Kona was talking about the downward trend and asking for reasons why it is continuously going down. And I think we've tried to allude to a number of interventions on the technology side, the infrastructure, the fencing, the scanners, and so on. And also specific interventions such as Operation Vala. So quite clearly, it's not by design that we have down managed this, and while we are truly intolerant to escapes because security is critical to our function, we are saying that we also realistically cannot lock people up all hours of the day. We need to, because of our rehabilitation endeavors, there's an element of risk that we will have to take. I just want to come back to some other issues. The question around the fuel vetting. Mr. Self, I think you have asked the following question on that. I just signed off the response. And it's more or less around what Mr. Mutseki has said. But other than that, also to report that the chief staff in DCS have now been appointed. So, and in addition to the business process, connecting the training, we really think we're going to be able to move forward whilst we're continuing to. With the vetting undertaken by NIA in terms of our previous agreement. In fact, the Minister is telling me to answer that question. I won't see any standards, but I'm a bit more concerned about contradicting what may be in there, so if you excuse me. But, Chairperson, also the issue of people who should be held accountable. Criminally, I think that's whilst it's a bit more difficult with the self to say that that we must hold them accountable for crimes committed whilst they are on the foot. The actual escape in itself is a criminal activity, and that's what we must seek to criminalize once we have seen collusion. I've started discussions with my counterpart in public prosecutions, and I hope to resume those discussions again. So come up with a service level agreement where we will cooperate with them to pursue things in their interest and matters in our interest. I think Ms. Chikunga was asking whether our disciplinary process in itself is a sufficient deterrent. We've never done research to look at that kind of correlation, but I'm saying we should throw everything at it, including the criminal consequences that must follow. I've been working very closely with NIA, public prosecutions, and police throughout, particularly around the Marty escape, where we're continuing our investigation to pursue the criminal angle cases around Kalakabusha, escape, and so on, where we really say if there is a possibility of pursuing people criminally, we should do that. The Pretoria incident reported on special assignment is saying that dismissing them on the spot is not sufficient. If indeed they have attempted to smuggle contraband into our facilities and there was a possibility of them being paid off, they must account for that and there must be criminal consequences. So I'm saying that whilst the disciplinary action in itself, we will do that as a matter of routine, we are not satisfied until the message goes on that it's not in the interest of our staff to collude or to be involved in criminal activity. I think if I just go through, we've covered most, except to say that I think it's related again to a question that came up, I think, Ms. Morty. I wanted to make the statement that we're also concerned that people who are on parole, part of our incidences, and we're quite upset that by people who are on parole, and they may be out for some minor offences, they then go and commit quite serious offences, like murder and rape, whilst on parole. And we're quite distressed by that. The question whether we must say that our rehabilitation or parole system is failing is still, the jury's still up on that. But I think we need to, again, say to ourselves that whilst people come into our prisons and with the prison conditions, I actually acknowledge that overcrowding, the lack of rehabilitation, there's the possibility of people being more traumatized and that making them even worse criminals. We must never underplay that. And it brings me back to the point that I wanted to make earlier, that the harsher circumstances must be reserved for those that society must be protected from and whom we must punish. For the rest, we have to continue to be creative. I think Minister will remember last week there was a very useful article in the Business Day where this issue of incarceration and whether we can build ourselves out of this was debated. And I think we really welcome that kind of public debate. I think that it's deepening our discussion and really opening it up for us to engage honestly around some of the challenges. Chairperson, I think we've covered most of it, but if not, members should please come back. And then on some of the specifics, I hope my director went out to get the specific information.
We are having enough time until 1 o'clock. We will ask questions. I know that the members will ask questions. Cindy, is it a follow-up on this? Is it a follow-up? Let me also ask a question. I will give you a chance. I'm going to start at your second page. Your second page. You are saying security challenges, threats, why escape? And you are saying our facilities are old and not responsive to new threats. Why are people not escaping from Zanin prison, where you know you can take your foot and kick that prison down to the ground? People are sitting in there. There's no escape for 5 years. They reported to us for 5 years. But Shepton prison, we were there now in August. Not a single escape. You know, they were telling us that they are praying day and night. They are calling it the prayer prison. Mm-hmm. The prayer prison. They were telling us. Not a single, we visited that prison. You can see from inside, outside, where people are moving up and down. Not a single person escaped there. Kalakabusha is not an old prison. But 10 people escaped from there. Johannesburg prison is not an old prison, but people escaped there. Leeuwpoort prison, we visited that prison. Well kept. It can be maybe an old structure, but it very well kept. People are escaping, not escaping. I'm questioning your page here to say our facilities, some of the reason for escape is that our facilities are old and not responsive to new threats. Cindy?
Yeah, no, thank you, Chairperson. Just from that very statement, Chairperson, our facilities are old and not responsive to new threats. What is then the department doing in order to ensure that the facilities do respond to new threats? That's the question, Chairperson. But also, Chairperson, on the issue of escape, there is an observation that most of them okay on weekends. It's an observation. I cannot say it's sexual because I don't think I can prove that. But if indeed it is a correct observation that most of these escapes open on weekends, how can the department account for that? And what are the measures put in place to ensure that it doesn't happen? Because in this probably it's an observed change. Secondly, on one of the pages there is an issue about the inmate tracking system. And I just want to know what is the impact of the inmate tracking system where it is used in as far as correcting the escapes or minimizing the escapes. And Chairperson, I think I heard the response from the Commissioner in as far as the issue of training, particularly the fact that all trainees receive training on security measures. But Chairperson, I think mine was not more on that. I think it was more on ethical and professional conduct. On subjects such as people, when we visit them, the nursing college, infectious nursing, the colleges there, we looked into the curriculum and we came back, we made our own recommendations to say if it can be reviewed so that it is inclusive of most of these facts. Because, Chairperson, like I said earlier on, the escape at its face value is an act of negligence. It's an act of misconduct, malpractice. And you would have expected that during training, these things are said and people, they are told that whenever there's an escape, you remain accountable so that it shouldn't happen. I just wanted to check as to whether we have that subject now in the curriculum. And furthermore, to check on the frequency of the reviewal of curriculum, because in one of the slides here, it says, however, crimes that remain high involve sophisticated syndicates. And one would want to know as to whether the curriculum itself is on par with the sophistication of criminals in as far as its frequency of reviewer. But further, Chairperson, if those people that are responsible for the training of our schools are aware of this trend. Because when we visited the colleges, they were complaining that they are a forgotten nation. They are not spoken about. And one can testify to that. Even the presentation today, for me, you talk about escape. Surely there must be something said about the training of people that are coming in so that they know about this thing, so that we don't have to give in service education, but we train them from scratch so that when they come, they know. It actually proves what those educators were saying, that probably there is some truth in it. Now, I just want to know as to whether they are also aware, what is the frequency of their in-service training, and updating in dealing with these issues. Thank you, Chairperson.
This announcement that tea and coffee outside. I'm not going to break up. If you want to the department as well, Commissioner Minister, everybody in the house, including. You can go and grab a cup of tea and come in and have it. But I see that the Deputy Minister is also present. Deputy Minister, your Chief of Staff have reported that you will be late. You are welcome, Deputy Minister, in our meeting. Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I also apologize for being late? I hope you did get my apologies. I was at another meeting.
Always, Mr. Chairman, even if you are leaving early, I'm always getting that message.
And you know what meetings they are too. Look after you.
I don't know.
Okay, Chairperson, thank you. I obviously missed the presentation, but I did read through the documents last night. And I've tried to establish what has been said about the Groot-Schuur incident, specifically the Horn incident. And I gather that the answer is that the matter is still under investigation. I'm concerned, this is now two and a half years ago that incident happened. We've heard lots of rumors that officials were involved. Nobody confirms or unconfirms the rumors, but I really think the time has come where we get to be told what is going on in that investigation and exactly what is anticipated and who was involved. Thank you.
Mr. Sitton, let me tell you, I have raised it very sharply. I can tell you that I've raised it. The Commissioner and the Minister know that I've raised the issue of courtesy. Responded to say exactly what you are saying. It's still ongoing, but you are here now, and they can respond. It's Mr. Mahote and Bishop Dollar.
Thank you, Chair. Chairperson, about the inmate checking, this reminds me of Devon West. Inmate checking, I'm not sure whether it falls under this presentation. There were unanswered questions on that one. Also, Chairperson, I'm not entirely happy about this camp. Besides being sworn in, do they get training to look after inmates? Because you have just mentioned that now they are even sworn in. Do they get training?
You take one of my points about Zanin, but let me just follow up Shepperton, and it was very important. You know, Shepperton, you were talking about Zanin. Let me tell you something. With my language today, which means when the government says people, they must prevent and careful for aid. And then people they must do that. If you are going to do it, one day you are going to face a problem for the aid. Now, why I'm saying this, Shepherd? These are me. We must wait one day, they say, the whole place is not the escape. Because we are talking always about Sanin. The response is there, nothing happened. I'm telling you, it's a problem, because there is we've got a good member in the Department of Korea. We've got a bad. Those money, if one day they can also go there in Zanin, get money somewhere, when we wake up morning, they say all the prisons are gone. Can happen. And is where we are going to start now. We can try to get money to get a contract and all those things. You know, we must wait to have a problem for this country. The point you raise. You know, when you come to Rangani, you can't even think of this. I'm telling you. But the people who put them in the department, one day also we are going to face the same problem. But it's going to be painful. When we say, we will say always in this time, what's going on and what's going on. And another issue, Jefferson, my question. in Kalakabucha. Well, if I'm not wrong, there were 10 escapes and 5 arrested and 1 was killed. There were 24 4 of them that they were killed. I don't know if they were still in the run or re arrested those 4 of them. This is my question, that question. And another question, Chairman, if I'm not mistaken, 2001, 2002, one of those 2 years. In Bombay, there were 22 escapes. I just found out, Jefferson, that 22, they were re-arrested for what? But I remember always they were just asking, you know, if I just want to know. Well, I know the commissioner, those people were talking, and if I'm not mistaken, or Reverend. I don't know, but well, I'm asking this fine man. Those 22 offenders re-arrested, for those who were helping them to say, hey, bro, the thing is okay, now you can go. You know, it's easy. People that say, where is those 22? And, thank you very much,
Thank you very much. The incident of Epan game, I think it's 1997, somewhere there, you can't, but it's that time, Mr. Mugwena, Obi Mugwena was still the chairperson at that time, and I, Bishop is just mentioning that day, and if you are in a position to respond, it's fine, but Bishop is also saying you were not there, even the minister were not there. At that time, but if you are in a position to respond, you are free to do so. Let's take the responses, and then I will come. I will come in again with some other questions.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. I think the question that you started off with a very interesting question indeed. Why are we claiming that our facilities are not keeping up with the new threats and so on? And therefore, why is it that Kipling's and Nien and Bochetson are not escaping? We should ask the people of the Nien, my Lord Bishop. but I think it's got something to do with the people of the Nien. They are good people. And I'm quite serious. I'm quite serious about it. You know, the problem we have is in the big city, you have many people who do not know each other. So when there are people who escape, they think they will get away, they will get into those informal settlements, they become invisible, and they will just continue with life as normal. If you are from the league, you are known. You are known by that community. And if you escape, I'm sure, Bishop, they will bring it back to our facility. And the inmates know that. It's not in their interest to escape. If they do escape, they will make sure they run to the city. They won't stay in the name. So I think it's the issue of social cohesion, or the lack of it, that we as a country must respond to. We need to begin to build our communities. We need to begin to make sure that people, again, the vibrancy of people knowing each other, knowing what's happening in our area. We've not done this yet, but my reading is that it has to do largely with that. So that if you find a facility in the urban setting that's not conducive to these security challenges, it is a much bigger problem. But I'm sure the minister may want to come in on this. Please, Minister.
Let me do that now quickly. Chairperson, this thing is saying a lot about this facility, but we're looking here at the mindset of the offender and the mindset of the official. That's very, very important. I have visited last Friday 3 facilities, and I told the commissioner, Mr. Rienerheng, that facility is creaking. The fact that the 80, the awaiting child detainees are not walking out it's not because they don't want to go out. It's because they know somewhere, somehow, they'll be rearrested and they'll come back. But there's also one thing I saw in Southern Africa. They took initiative. They've got two blocks. And what they did was to put barbed wire to separate juveniles from the others. And they just did it themselves as the center. It's got lots of numbers of awaiting child. Or rather, see it being a remand center. But that mindset thing is quite important. But also to accept those that have been sentenced to longer terms also come to terms with the fact that we are sentenced, we are not going to go anywhere. We're just staying where we are and maybe trying to get back our humanity. But I wanted to mention that I'm happy you have Zanin as a prayer prison. Shouldn't be Zanin only. Please, in the prayer prison, include Groenfeld. Groenfeld is just on the other side of the Vaal River. It's an old prison. I visited Groenfeld. They're still using the old chain and gate thing to open. It's a very, very old prison. I was amazed. Every gate is locked by a key. Not the prison key that we are used to. The lock. Put the lock on the gate and we go in. It's so amazing that people are still staying there. But again, I was referring to the commission about our maintenance of some of these old prisons. We had the old ramp system that we're working on. I want to talk much better on that. And it's important that we continue upgrading those that need to be upgraded. Atteridgeville, please pray for it as well. Atteridgeville is just in Pretoria. And the taxis go by Atteridgeville. It's got a fence this side. The prisoners inside, it's a zinc structure. That I've also put to the commissioner that this needs to be upgraded before we have a huge incident on ourselves. In Kalakabusha and Bandi, you've got to read the politics of that place to understand why that happened. The politics of Kalakabusha and Bandi, taxi association, and how we got that prison. Most of the members of staff who work in that facility are actually involved with the taxi association. Oh yes, they're involved with that taxi association. Most of the people, organized crime, go into Kalakabusha, our houses. Some of the taxi operators live in our houses there. So you can imagine the kind of, it's a political sort of burning pot. It's a cooking pot. And we're trying our best to sort that out. That those who don't belong to the facility should be out of that. But they still come in and out. So Kalakabusha has got that special socio-political problem which impacts on the prison itself. The last thing, Chairperson, I wanted to just speak on the colleges. Just touching on the colleges, Zonnevater and Kwanzaa, I made it my business to go and visit those colleges two times or three times a year if I can. And I try to push myself, get me time to go there, to spend time. Because I feel those colleges are critical to the work that we are doing. You raise a number of things. And as a former teacher, I should be able to understand what you are raising, which I do. The issue of the reviewing the curriculum. That's the curriculum that we have, and I've asked this of Nitaung. Does it really render service to us as we train these new recruits? And maybe something that I personally would want to take charge of. But they are not forgotten. Because I try my best to go there and make sure that those kids understand the system they are going to go into. And how they are going to assist this whole safety approach that we are looking at. And they don't fall into the trap of being like the older ones who are colluding with the prisoners in the work that they do. So that's quite important. Thank you very much, Cindy, for raising that particular issue. Just one thing I think, again, Dhammo should respond to this thing. What are we doing to respond to these old structures? What have we put in there? And I think we have put in something there to try and respond to those old structures. But the last thing is that this thing of incidents. You say they happen on weekends. The biggest incidents in correct reference that I know of, quite correctly, happen on weekends. For a variety of reasons. Some happen just during the week, but the big one, and I always sit at home every weekend with this trepidation that something is going to happen. And on weekends, therefore, my wife never sees me because I'm on the road visiting. Just as part of getting myself used to all these incidents, the Gomba, the Nifa case in Pretoria, which was a very painful case, happened on the weekend. And because of big one. The Pavianspoor lessons happened on the weekend. That also was a huge one. The Dark Horn case also happened on the weekend. All these things, raining on weekends and the things, this should be the time when these things don't happen. But I think they will respond to that official. There is an agreement between ourselves and the union. Not on anything but on percentages. But sometimes managers, and that's something that comes now is bringing into sharp focus, cannot just stick to an agreement which is not an agreement that fits all. So in your facility, if you feel you're looking after these people and these people are quite dangerous and these people can do anything, you have to juggle your management in such a way that it suits you. Cannot stick to, if we said 46% of the workforce on weekends, and then you stick to that. We've got to have managers who can bite the bullet and come up with new ideas on doing things. I'm not going to go into the Jack Horn case, because it's still a painful case with myself over the week that weekend. And I've dealt with Jack, the wife, and everything else that goes with it. But, safe to say, the case is subjudicate because there is a civil claim against us. I do get letters from one of the brothers of the wife who writes to me regularly. And I get those. Immediately I get them, I give them to the commissioner after reading them. Commissioner, what steps should we take to try and close the chapter on the thing? Because there's got to be closure on that. So I just wanted to mention just those few things that please, the questions that are being asked are really assisting us to be able to see there's a weakness there, and I'm listening with interest, because these are some of the issues that I personally have raised with some of them on some of these issues. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Minister. I'm very much happy, Minister, that you raised specifically the issue of staff over weekend. I'm very much happy to hear that. You know, Minister, you are right. These people mustn't say that no, this is the norm and we are going. Let me give you an example of Kalakabusha. I'm having the steps here. You see, and I asked the question there, and it's related to what things they have asked. You see, 332 inmates, and this is very dangerous criminals. During the week, there's 21 officials working. Now, half of them over the weekend. With other words, there's only 10. In unit 16A, 387, there's 17 during the week. There's only 8 over weekend. 367, unit 16B, 367, 17 during the week. There's only 8. And so on. 403 in unit 15A, 16. In other words, during the weekend, it's 8, and so on and on. I'm very much happy, Minister, that you are raising this issue, because these people must also use their discretion to say, these are very dangerous people, yes, and we can't take this chance. The Minister is raising the issue of the gangs, the taxis, and what. Use your own sense and say, these people can escape because they are dangerous.
I can't work with 8 people over the weekend. But I'm very much happy, Minister, that you yourself raised it and you said that this can't happen. They must use their discretion, these people. Commissioner, over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Minister Chairperson. Perhaps just to come back to the question of what it is that we're doing, and I'm sure Mr. Dalmans will come back and give some detail around the issue of facilities. We've recently appointed a deputy commissioner to manage our facilities program, and we're quite excited. I mean, of course, it's a major, a vast program with billions of rand and lots and lots of activity. The minister has spoken about us phasing out the RAM and phasing in the planned maintenance process. We've spoken about using our own resources to improve the existing facilities that we've had. More recently, I've asked the infrastructure project team to acknowledge that we've inherited all these facilities. Some of them are extremely old. We've not kept pace with the building of new facilities. And yet, we are a developing country. We can't show all our resources and our money at building of correctional facilities. And so therefore, for some time, we really have to live with what we've got. But there are things that we can do, Chairperson, to again mitigate those risks. And one of the things that we've recently decided is to explore the possibility of using some of our existing unused facilities that may not have met certain security standards. But that what we do in order to deal with some of our overcrowding issues as well, what we do is to put a very strong, secure, electrified fence around that building. So that we have strong on the outside and perhaps soft on the inside, a kind of more increased minimum facility in order to reduce some of our overcrowding. But if we also acknowledge that from a security standpoint, we have very little options other than using technology and fencing to deter people from escaping. Mr. Chikunga, I have to acknowledge that indeed there are certain gaps in our training, and I think thanks for having clarified what it is that you were concerned about. On the level of basic training, and I say basic training because that's essentially what it is, training for 6 months at a college with 15 modules and 6 months going back into the field, you can't transmit too much information to these young recruits also. And so therefore, correctly you've pointed out that we're talking about continuing education, the on-the-job training that becomes critical, the specialized functional training. I think indeed that's what we are saying, more and more of that should happen. But also not only targeting our recruits, but also their supervisors specifically. Because ultimately when you have issues of non-compliance and lack of control, you immediately talk about supervision and the extent to which they're knowledgeable and doing their work effectively, including over weekends. But the major part of what you're raising, apart from the specialized training, I refer to the training of our ESD unit, the training of our supervisors, in addition to the basic training. As part of our functional training also focuses on ethics, training on ethics. You know that we do have a code of ethics. In fact, the Deputy Commissioner Communication, who is here, he's been driving the ethics training program together with other colleagues. But more recently, when we look at the kind of departments we have and the type of people we attract, we're saying that we need to quite deliberately begin a process of professionalizing corrections in South Africa. And the implication of saying that is, you know, there must be certain standards that would mean that people would have to meet those standards before they can be registered. There must be a degree of continuing education for them to remain registered. They must subscribe to some basic ethical principles of that professional council. If they do not, the council will take action against them. So to increase the level of professionalism, I'm quite desperate. In fact, one of the issues raised in our integrated strategy is to continuously move towards the professionalization of corrections. And we have requested, in fact, we've requested that the CDC Corporate Services should come up with a proposal that will enable the minister to appoint an interim council to take forward that issue. So I'm really glad that you have raised that as a concern, ethics training and improving our standards and holding people into accountable for professional conduct or misconduct as well. But let me allow the colleagues to come in again and I will pick up on some issues that have not covered.
Let me just perhaps answer some few other questions. I will not go into the issue about people of Sanimi. I think the commissioner has answered quite adequate the issue around the Sanimi. And I think I agree with you fully. Sometimes I'm from Sanimi. Yes. Now, okay, let me just talk to the issue of immigration from one angle. In our facilities, historically, part of what we normally did was to have you walk in, and then you queue, you put your fingers there, and then you walk in with your name, that which name is the name that appears on your ticket and on your warrant. Sometimes it may not necessarily be your actual name. What immigration was intended for was to improve the flow of people into court, especially the way to trial people exclusively. What was an unintended consequence of immigration was that we all of a sudden also have to take your photo so that we can mix the name, match the name to the face. So once you call a name, you can also tell you are the right person. And so if a person has case, as it was the case in Johannesburg, the police could immediately get a photo, so you didn't have to explain that the person is tall, darkish, and then he lives or something. We just gave the photo. And therefore it was quicker for everybody, including the community, to train who exactly the SKPs were. And so this is the reason I'm mentioning immigration alongside everything else. There, because there were then those unintended consequences of immigration. I think the minister has answered the issue, because this is what it is about the weekend case and when they happen, few people, and it's a very serious operation for us if a person all of a sudden becomes sick because of the reduced numbers of staff and so on. Because it really means that if one or two people are sick, in the specific case of what we're speaking about, 10 people. And in terms of our procedure, that person has to be taken to hospital by 3 staff members. If the next one gets sick in the same facility and the next one again, it means there are no people for whatever the number of inmates that are there. And so it impacts on the operation of the correctional facilities in that way, and therefore become weak and the case comes seizing. And I think the issues of Bomba were very much that an image could be in the corridor for the next 5 minutes and nobody will know that person is in that corridor during that time because of the reduced number of staff in that facility. So when an accident happens during the weekend, it's very drastic. It can, in most cases, even be fatal, because of numbers of staff that are there. Mr. Maldeshe also asked a question about the inmate breaking. Could not remember what question was not answered about Westville. Yes, I know the story, sir. What happened subsequent to that? And I know that we're meant to be providing a report to yourself in one of the sittings during this or next week. I can't remember when it is around the immigration. And I wanted to thought that we'll be able to account for details of that then. Because indeed a very significant number of those things were found back. But we can deal with the details, but the process could not be used and so on. We can deal with the details during that specific presentation. We are about to start a process, if we have not started, of building a facility at Sane. I think the current Sane takes 200 inmates, and the new facility that we're going to be building to substitute that will take 250 inmates. So things will improve even if the people of Sane don't escape, because we know that the conditions are unbearable there, especially in summer. Besides, it's just a very hot place. I mean, if you now locked up at night in a shanty facility, it becomes terrible to stay. And so there is a process of building a 350 facility around that area. I don't know, sir. I think the remaining questions that the German can answer around the terms whether they get training or so. Thanks.
Chairperson, thanks. The old structures, I think it's proper to say that our structures did not really make provision for the rehabilitation initiatives of the department. That's a fact. And then the other important thing is the RAM contract only maintained facilities in the past. And the leadership now of the department has given instruction that must be phased out. So that we work within a program of 5 years, this program will make the provision for the building of new facilities, the upgrading of facilities, proper planned maintenance of facilities, as well as only resources and renovation. So we will work within a program now over a period of 5 years. And one will be able then to track progress in terms of the different projects. Like for now, I know there's 12 facilities identified for upgrading specifically. And that detailed project plans have been developed so that one tracks then progress in this. So there will be a 5-year facilities plan in place. In terms of technology systems, I think it's also safe to say that the department has introduced technology systems, access control system with biometric fingerprint readers and turnstiles as a new application in 2005. That was something new, and we have introduced that to 66 facilities. We have followed up on that with fences to 47 facilities and integrate some of the existing facilities. The fences then will make provision for CCTV cameras on that, linked to a control room, so that locally, regionally, and nationally, you can observe what's going on. So these are new technology strategies that the leadership has introduced. And that will be followed up with X-ray scanners and the rollout of other systems in the department. The tent and train around that, we have an orientation for these temporary warders, an orientation program where we orientate them in terms of security measures that they have to apply. Now what we do, we cancel this person immediately when there's an escape or an attempt of escape. There's a normal investigation, and then actions are being taken against him and also removed, so that this stamp should not take out any offenders. They are currently, it's not a big group of people, but we are having them in the system, as I said, to assist police, transport department, to guard offenders for cleaning purposes. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. I think my colleagues have covered most of the issues, but just a few that I need to respond to still. The one concern that comes up repeatedly is the numbers that we have, either over weekends or the lack of staff resulting in this case. Shepherdson, you would know that this matter also came up at another committee last week. where our actual numbers that we reported on in terms of the recruitment of entry-level staff were questioned in terms of the net effect. What I can assure you is that indeed we have, over the last 3 years, recruited and appointed in excess of that 10,311 staff members for basic level training. Of course, we can't help it that as we recruit, we had to deal with some backlog of people who have left the system and others who continue to leave the system, but there is a net gain. Chairperson, the reason I'm making that point again is because we have said that many of the challenges that we continue to face is as a result of us operating a five-day establishment, and we have to treat weekends as an additional establishment so that your people really do two jobs at the same time. We have said that the only way we can solve that is if we migrate towards the seven-day establishment. And I want to reiterate, we have the agreement to migrate towards the seven-day establishment. That will kick in terms of the agreement that we've had with Labour. That will kick in on the 1st of April 2008, next year. We are currently, part of us having recruited entry-level staff was to populate it in order to have the right numbers for us to have the appropriate number of shifts. We have since then started to test many of the approaches towards making the seven-day establishment work. As I speak, at the moment we have senior managers visiting certain selected sites, including Johannesburg, where we're testing and modeling how the seven-day establishment will function. We have realized that we will never have the required numbers, but even so, we're not ready to postpone this to a later date. We are in discussion with Labour to see if instead of four tips that we wanted to have as per the initial model, we reduce that to two shifts. You may know that the private prisons are operating on that basis currently and quite successfully so. Most other countries in the UK and the US in particular also have a two-shift, seven-day system. And we've discovered from our own research that staff generally find that system a lot more satisfactory. So we've been quite advanced in terms of our preparation for seven-day establishment. I need to caution, of course, that anything that you introduce will initially have some hiccup. We are anticipating, we're planning as far as we can for some of that disruption as we begin to migrate. In fact, we're thinking currently that we want to launch 7 days a bit early in Johannesburg so that we can sort out some teething problems there. From February to April. So we're quite excited on the one hand, but also quite aware that there may be some kind of transitional period. And together with the 7 day establishment, we are saying, apart from sorting out our shift system, making sure that the people are at the right places where they should be, we're also quite confident that that is a precondition for effective implementation of your structured day program, the 3 meal system, and a host of other initiatives that the white paper wants us to embark on. We have, as part of the agreement, Resolution 1 of 2007, we have also agreed with Labour to introduce occupation-specific dispensation for correctional officials, hopefully that will make up for some of the loss of income arising from weekend work. And we've also said to them we're quite keen, whilst the agreement says that occupation-specific dispensation should be introduced with effect from 1st of July 2007, that we would want that to coincide with the introduction of 7 day establishment on the 1st of April. So these things will come quite fast, and I would really want this portfolio committee to be quite aware of these transitional matters as we're going forward.
On that one of the shortage of staff, you are saying that you have recruited 3,000 for the new financial year. Is that correct?
Jefferson, I can find the figures of the actual number of recruits. I was referring to the 10,311 of target for the 3 years.
How do you explain in the annual report on page 144? A total of 1,275 people left the department in this financial year. This financial year. In other words, there's a shortage of these people. You see, the resignation. 692 people resigned from the department, and so the other retirement. So, but it, all in all, 1,200. I'm just raising it.
No. Thank you, Jefferson. I need to say that natural attrition happens, and it happens within DCS. In fact, the numbers we think will soon increase because of also the minister having improved the voluntary severance package, employee initiated severance package. So yes, indeed, there is an outflow. There's an outflow of, in particular, professional to a large extent because of the lack of incentives and the conditions under which our people work. We can talk about some of the strategies there, but. And unfortunately, that does impact on the ultimate, the net effect of our recruitment efforts, and we constantly have to then recruit to replace for national recruitment as well. We're quite aware of that. And the capacity of our colleges, we have reported to this committee previously of efforts that we have to recruit faster. In fact, now that Kimberley is going to become operational, we need to recruit in the forthcoming year the staffing for Kimberley as well. Unfortunately, we have the two colleges only, but we are looking at, we have always introduced creative ways to bring in the numbers whilst we send the other half for practical training. I wanted to, there was the question of, page 38 that Bishop Tola asked.
The Bishop has made an example.
I see.
He has made an example of HIV/AIDS and prevention, and then he said that with escape, why are we not taking into account an imprisonment before it's too late? That was
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. I just didn't want to ignore your concern. But on the issue of the Mpangeni incident, can we try and get the information for you on the 22 escapes in 1997?
Chairperson, thank you. I must say I'm very disappointed. First of all, just to put on record, I don't want to be as harsh with the minister, but that whole incident did not happen on a weekend. It happened on a Wednesday. I was called out of the chief of forum to go and assist the family to find out what condition Mr. Horn was in. This is the first time in 2.5 years. We've been asking for reports for 2.5 years. This is the first time we hear the matter of sub-duty case. Now, my sources tell me that the case has been dropped, but nevertheless, I think that we need to ask the minister and the commissioner to go back and think about this thing. I can understand not wanting to talk in an open meeting about this matter, but I believe it is owed to the Correctional Services Portfolio Committee to know what took place that day. And I'm asking the Minister and the Commissioner to go back and give us some thought and to come back, even in a closed meeting, and advise this committee what happened that day. Thank you.
Sitten, I can promise you that we will get the entire full report on the Horn issue. You are correct, it was on a Wednesday. I remember it was on a Wednesday, not. You see, the minister is visiting a lot of prisons, and then the minister is also getting confused. But it's true, it was on a Wednesday. Cindy?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. I think one has to say that we ask this question
and we also acknowledge the fact that the terms of access in DCS are declining, which we appreciate. But we still ask questions. When Mr. Mseki was responding on the issue of staff and so on, the question came up in my mind to say, if indeed it is true that when a prisoner or an inmate falls ill over the weekend and three people have to take whoever to the hospital outside, and that will affect the number of the staff remaining in the school. I thought you were therefore going to proceed and say, based on that, we have therefore issued out a policy to managers to say, in a situation where 1-3 has happened, this is what the manager should do, so that the transfer of prisoners to hospitals does not compromise the security of those that are remaining in prison. That's probably making it easy for them to escape, because three people are supposed to be in prison are now somewhere outside the hospital. I thought you were going to continue and give us that information, because indeed you're talking to senior managers of the department. And second, I wanted also to check as to what is the rate of rearrest of these escapees, the 113, how many of them get rearrested? And lastly, Chairperson, to check as to whether the escapes that we are talking about exclude parolees, those that abscond during the parole whatever. Thank you, Chairperson.
No, because I was there in Galagabusa. There were 10 SKs, and I think 5 arrested, 4 of them. I was there, those 4 that on the run or that he arrested.
Just from me, I want to assure the honourable member Sibyl, honourable Sibyl Sitton, when you raise these issues, you can never be at odds with the minister. I can promise you that, because you are raising issues on your oversight responsibility. So when you raise them, please rest assured, nobody's going to get odds with you, not me. But of course, when you go into the house and you raise issues in the house which we have discussed here, I'm going to eat you for lunch. That I'm sure. But when we are here, you won't be at odds with me at all. So I think we understand the thing. So I can assure you, this is a report. Chairperson, do not fuel the fire. Please, Chairperson, don't fuel the fire. We will definitely come back with a better report than what we have come with this particular protective case, because it does touch me as well. One of my drivers was involved in that case. So I'm one of those people who have an interest in it, to see which way it finishes at the end of the day. He was one of the escorts that took that young man to Fortescue. And he got injured as well in that process. So I'd like to see closure in it as well. So rest assured, not at all. Thank you.
A question from me, Commissioner. I hear that the members are saying that the escape rent is going down, and it's a very good thing, 130. I want the breakdown. I'm interested in the breakdown of this 130. What type of people have escaped here? That's one. I want to be convinced that, you see, the second graph, yes, this one, you are saying 6, yeah, 20 or 5, 20 or 6, 3,
maximum exchange, 2005, 2006. 2006, 2007, you say 6. I want to take you to a report of Eastern Cape last year when we visited, 31st July to 4th of August 2006. And there, there are figures here that show that a lot more people escaped, a lot more maximums have escaped, and not six. I can borrow you, Commissioner, if you don't have it. It's in here. Now, one of the issues, I hear that Mr. Mteki was raising the issue of middle drift, August 2006. Now, I don't know if this is the same exchange in middle drift maximum center 2006, June the 6th, where I will read because it's a report. On 6 June 2006, two inmates marched out of A1 up to C section gate where they gun-pointed one member, took the member hostage and moved to the guardhouse number 3. The inmates confronted and pointed a firearm at the member, who manned the guardhouse, and the inmates took his departmental firearm, went outside the correctional center and escaped in a getaway car. That was on the 6th of June. There's another one in Buckley East, the 10th of June. 8 further charged inmates were on exercise, guarded by 4 members. At 11, the same 8 inmates were served lunch, and it was then that the member in charge noticed that one inmate was not among the other inmates. The members conducted a search, but to no avail. The members could not indicate as to when and how the escape occurred. I don't know if this is part and parcel of this graph that you are giving to us. I'm saying I'm having even our visit in KwaZulu-Natal, different figures. I don't know if the Kalakabusha incident is part and parcel of this maximum, because there alone 10 people escaped. And the information was that these people were very dangerous people. Now I need clarification on the things that I have pointed out. I'm saying I'm questioning this test. You must first convince me that this test is correct.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say to Honourable Keaton, I think we can have that conversation to deal with the substantive issues. I personally have also spoken to the Horn family and to other individuals involved. And they also indicated that they would like to bring closure. So quite clearly, it's in the interest also of this committee to have the information so that we can help the family to do exactly that. And I'm sure the RC would be quite willing to do so, notwithstanding the threats of civil action, but I would limit that to assess in the conversation of members of the portfolio committee. I think, Ms. Chipinga, the issue of policy and instructions and standards about the movement of inmates, Mr. Mateki and Mr. Darmon's response to. The question also about the rate of rearrest. I think, thank you for that. You know, we're busy now with an initiative where we with the Technical Assistance Unit of Treasury coming up with what are the things that we want to measure. And I've never come across any measurement in any of our documents where we actually talk about the rearrest of escaped inmates. And I think indeed it would be a useful indicator for us to measure. And so whilst we may not be able to give you information on the numbers of people rearrested, of the overall 113, I think we should make sure that this is an indicator in subsequent measurements. And I hope Mr. Mustaki and Mr. Dalmans, who are responsible for the operational and business plan, keep that in mind. Mr. Tolo, the question around the number of escapes, my information, and I was working very closely with the Commission of Police during this escape and closely following the chains of actual numbers of people arrested. And I must confess that I lost track of whether there were further rearrests subsequent to the initial five reported and one person shot. My reading is that we've not had further arrests on Kalakarusha, but I seek under correction. I think the breakdown on the nature of the escapes, Mr. Darmons will engage with that. And then perhaps for me to respond to the more loaded question, Mr. Bloom. I was going to say politically more loaded question, but I thought you were saying that I must, or the department must convince you that the figures are correct. I'm afraid I'm not going to try. I'm going to lose against you because I don't know what information you have up your sleeve, and I'll declare that I've lost. But what I will undertake is I will take the information that you have and just correlate it with what I've got. When you started to read, I noticed that some of my people may have sent the information. I thought they prepared for me, to you as well. So.
I'm not going there with
intact. Thank you. Then I be very worried because what you've read from the other side doesn't is the same that sent to me. So I thought they'll at least give me more information. No, on the more serious note, I'm confirming that some of the cases you've read is also information contained in my file. And I would say that, indeed, the onus is on our management areas and centers to report every escape. And if you have statistics that show that there are more escapes than what is reported, they've got some explanation to do. And I would really want to engage with the information that you've got. For now, I have to stand by the reported information that we have. The little piece of paper has good news, Bishop Tolo, is just to say that one more arrest at Kalakibusha and three still at large. And as I reported earlier, this is the ongoing work between ourselves and national intelligence to pursue these kinds of cases on an ongoing basis. So it's always work in progress. So if you give us that information, we can really engage in the detail. But let me leave it to Mr. Darmons and Mr. Mateki to explain again.
No, thanks, sir. Perhaps answering the third question that Mr. Chipinga raised, I'm getting better with the pronunciation. No, I was not going to talk very much about that, but I was rather in fact, I was amplifying the point that was made earlier by the minister about what can complicate the severity of the cases that we can encounter as a result of that. My answer there will be a bit more different, that we have realized the the little more serious shortcoming of running in the manner that both the minister and the commissioner has alluded to around the management of the weekends. We certainly cannot function like that. And so our decision, which will happen in a very, very due course, will be to translate our working operations on Saturday and Sunday and make sure that those operations are indistinguishable to our operations, except where it's necessary, to our operations on Monday to Friday. That we should be able to run the executive services. In fact, in one or two of those days, we must be able to amplify our services. For a simple reason that families are at home, visits can increase, and there is quite a lot that can be done on Saturday or simply on Sunday. And so we must focus our way into increasing our operation and therefore our staff. At the moment, the 46 will have the staff that the minister and the chairperson are speaking about. It is a result of asking a 5 days full-time operating environment, when in fact we are a 7 day. And so our measures are towards increasing that and making sure that we run our operations on Saturday and Sunday as well. I think that part of the work has to happen at a very agent. They are moving towards that. It's a bit of discussion here that you may want to focus a bit of time on. I don't really want to take too much of the time here thinking about that and what it would really mean. The issue about the statistics you're thinking about do not include parolees or probationers, or for that matter, awaiting trial, people who await trial in the within the community supervision environment. The statistics you're giving is not include those at all. And if one may have to say something about that, in part, really would be to say we are looking into a problem that has arisen from that specific environment, our community correction environment, because our statistics in that area, especially when we talk about absconders, our statistics are unfortunately too much to reflect and perhaps not reflecting the truth of what actually happens there. Let me make you an example about what can potentially happen about our statistics. I could be going there as a correctional official on Saturday morning to go and check on you, because your condition says if you are to leave the house, you must report to us. Now, you could have had an emergency at 12 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning that has necessitated you to leave and not to be able to come back. And if you dare point that you will not have found us there, but when I arrive there, I mark you as absent, and then this increases your statistics and so on. And so we clearly have to look into those figures because they don't necessarily give a correct, and so you can't talk to them confidently about them. We need to look into those figures and make sure that we skew them in such a manner that they provide chances for people within the social environment to survive. As I say, you could be taking somebody to a hospital. You were not expecting me to be there. Your cousin could have asked you to go and meet somebody who could provide you with a job, but they arrived during the time when you are not there. But in our report, you will have absconded. And so, there are a whole range of issues that we still have to do to try and improve our records around community correction and administration thereof. Particularly, I think it's something that I might have alluded to check when we came to make a presentation on social reintegration, that our policies are and our actions should make sure that people who are in the community correction environment, their social environment should enable us to relate with them in a manner that enables them to reintegrate in the communities, and it should not be an obstacle when people try to reintegrate. And I'm not talking here about the person who's supposed to be at home but has decided to ignore everything else and run away. Those are the exceptions, and I think those are the statistics we're speaking about. But I'm saying at the moment our report will not reflect the truth, which, and the statistics as it stands now will not have been intended for that at all. Thanks.
Chairperson, two comments. The rate of arrest of these offenders, what we do with each and every aspect, we report that to the police for fingerprints
and to put that on the system. And I don't have the figures now, but and I will speculate if I give figures here. But we only trace them when they recommit, re-offend. That's when we trace them. And then it also happens that the offenders escape unseen. Those cases are also difficult to trace. But when they are being observed, they escape. And we employ the SAPS and the intelligence agencies. Our success rates are much higher there. So I will have to come back in terms of the rate and have to say over 7 year period. Then the breakdown on 113 effects, the type of people. In our slides we only broke it down in terms of maximum, median, minimum and awaiting trial detainees. But in terms of crime categories and age groups, we haven't done that detail. So if that's the request, maybe we should sit down and break it more down in detail for you in terms of the different crime categories, age groups, so that that gives you a better picture then. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, my concern is on this 7 days establishment of work. It's a 7 days establishment working days, it's like that. Chairperson, I'd like to hear the clarity in terms of these 7 days, because there was this cry on the members to say they are working 5 days and for weekend they must be off, and the weekend for them was making money for them because they were working overtime. So my clarity is that, Chairperson, I want to know that if now it's 7 days, these 7 days, how are they going to make sure that it's a pay day, it's not an overtime? And if it's a pay day, that the staff knows about this program that is going to start on the 1st of September 2008, that's what you are saying, Commissioner, then that they know about that, because when we go there, we ask them, we find that some of the things are just happening. Even the management, they don't tell them what is happening about them. They just decide what they decide, and there's no communication between the management and the staff. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much.
Chairperson, to me it's not a question, but it's just a comment. You know, thank you very much for the response from the commissioner about the number of youths escaping the Kala Commission. Now, gentlemen, you know, I remember they would say in the radio and in the TV, they would say when we were arrest some others from those groups, they would say they were on their way to go to Swaziland, you know. But now I think if maybe as a South African also, we can also maybe to consult our neighbor states, maybe those kinds of that escape in South Africa will find their incident or to Suprema. And I think also when we can try to look on that, but if we are not kept them, maybe they are somewhere in our neighbor state. It's just gonna happen.
Thank you.
And
there
was one question from Matt Wingwing. You know, and this is also a question that as a question for Ashwara. This 200 criminals that will go to Cockstar, CIMAX, are you ensuring and assure the committee that it will happen? You know why I'm asking this question? We were there on the 13th of August and we were given this very same information that 200 inmates
injured people will be transferred the very same week before Friday. Now I'm saying, Commissioner, are you saying to the committee here in Parliament today that by Friday, the 15th, when is the 15th? Sorry? Thursday. Will they be there? I am also going to ask the committee, two or three members, to go there unannounced and to check if these people were really transferred to that place. The minister has asked and invited us for the launch. When is the launch? The 27th. We will be there. We will go there and witness.
Thank you, Honourable Chair, and indeed, Mr. Mvena. Thank you very much for that clarity-seeking question. The first thing to say is that one of the good things that happened with the signing of Resolution 1 of 2007, in its fault, as it overturned a resolution that we've had as DCS with Labour, and our resolution 2 of 2005 specified that people should take days off for work on a Saturday and public holidays. And we know the havoc that that caused, that those people then take the days off in the weekend, those people are not at work and so on. I'm saying resolution 1 of 2007 overturned that with the result that with effect from the 1st of July, we are paying people for having worked on the Saturday and a public holiday, and they're no longer expected to take a day off. And that, I think, has been welcomed by staff, of course. The minister and I have been quite concerned about, again, getting back to a situation where we're paying people huge sums for overtime, knowing that we will have to pay in 7 days from the 1st of April. In my communication to staff, I've made it very clear they should not spend that additional money on making further debt. They must rather pay off some of their debt and, you know, service their bonds rather than incurring new debt. Because, you know, unfortunately, when we do phase it out and we do introduce the occupational specific dispensation, it will not amount to the same and for all people, that is. So that's the first response. The question as to where the staff are, where we've been very clear in our communication about the imminent phasing in of the 7-day establishment, and the leadership of Labour also been communicating it. Where the staff want to internalise that is a different matter. But I've said that from our research we have seen that after initial resistance in some of the areas where it was introduced, other jurisdictions in the US and the UK, staff really came to like this idea because they will work in cycles of working 4 days and then taking 3 days off, working 4 days and taking 3 days off. And they in those areas, they really like the idea of 3 days off. It gives them more certainty to spend time with their families and so on. Of course, we're quite aware that it may create other problems, such as more moonlighting now that they have more specific days that they can get off. But if that is declared to the employer, it should be acceptable as a way of supplementing the income. The question about the neighboring states, Bishop Tola, I think you're continuing on this theme, because I believe the people of Swaziland and the Sotho are very much like the people of the Sotho. You know, my colleague, I was in Swaziland recently, and also given the cohesion, the cohesiveness of the community and the knowledge and the fact that people in Swaziland also watch television in South Africa, I think they most likely to report when there's some escape in their midst. But for what it's worth, yes, we have to pick up on information like that and pass it on to our colleagues in the South African Police Services, whose responsibility is to rearrest these people.
Commissioner, can I help you with that as well?
Just to get in.
Yes, sir.
Just to get in.
whenever there is something that is between two countries, transnational, the security services work hand in hand. If one casts one's mind back on this, on a particular case with Mozambique, Mozambique immediately told us and South Africa that they wanted a meeting with us so that we can agree that if that particular offender pops up in Mozambique, we have a way of getting that offender back. There's that kind of agreement. So I'm just talking about the Swaziland issue. So therefore the security institution staff, together with us, will be notified immediately these guys are seen in Mozambique. The second thing, just going back to your 7-day establishment, you're quite correct what you're saying. But one of the problems that responsibilities that we don't take, all of us, including the labor union, is to communicate properly with our members of staff. Now, that has always been a problem with a huge department. And we need to do it better. Time and again, our communication person has this fight with me. When I say, whenever the minister speaks and speaks about policy issues, let's have that transmitted to all our facilities so that members of staff, particularly on their issues, can listen to what the minister is saying. And secondly, when we do other issues that actually affect offenders, we actually do the same. We put all our radios on. We link them up all the time so that we can communicate. Senior managers have been told time and again, whenever there are meetings, communicate the decisions of those meetings to members. The union has also a responsibility because they are members as well. So I was just trying to try to tie up that thing of communication. The last thing, there have been two shootouts ever since Kambangi. We're not dealing with just ordinary criminals there. We're dealing with organized crime. With those Mbangi guys, killing him Zimela is one of the known guys who led that escape. Killing is still on the loose. There have been two shootouts where killing in one case used school children. Ran among school children, brandishing a weapon, and the other guys couldn't nail him. The order from us, from me particularly, the order is where you get killing, you lead out the group, Zimela. Just get Kilili back or don't get him back, but get him.
We have to protect my minister and interested. We'll get him by all means. Chairperson, just to ask Mr. Darmond, you know, if he commits to the Kofstad and you come up to me, I can still go after him. Let me not commit. Let me give him the opportunity. But in terms of the August announcement, I hope he can also confirm that we're talking about two different ways of people being admitted to Mbongweni. Let me leave it to him. He's more familiar with the facts.
Chairperson, the 200 offenders, we have developed a transfer plan. Regions have identified Gauteng 95, KZN 85, Western Cape 15, Eastern Cape 4, Yalanen 1. That makes up the 200 to be transferred to Kofstad. The figure that I've received this morning was 97 have already been admitted. They are there. 35 will be transferred tomorrow. That made up the total of 132 and left us with 68. What has happened in the meantime, Western Cape, out of the 15 reported today, 6 could not be sent because of further charges that have happened during the process of selection. Eastern Cape, out of the 4, they could only transfer 2. So that's a reduction of the 200. Our contingency plan is that regions should continue identifying so that we end up with this figure. The minister has requested that we transfer the last group of offenders as we announce Operation Vala on the 27th. So we will abide by that and admit the last figure of the 200 on the 27th. So this is my commitment.
Chairperson, then just to correct, and maybe I've not been clear, the phasing in of 7-day establishment is indeed the 1st of April in Guinea, and not the 1st of September, just to clarify that. And the chairperson, that the Bongwele is a super maximum, not some free maximum.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Bishop. You will be the last question, yeah.
Chairperson, I got a word from Commissioner, that's for the amendment for the Rekhadu of the Anadu and the Magamon, the Minister of Shu has said. But I told you,
the Minister has explained and the Commission has explained about this transnational analysis, but we want to have
literally, and Marty is no exception. He makes loans and he gives money to the people that kind of support him. And he knows that these people are poor, so he would give them money for a friend. And then he gets involved in criminal activity, tends to do that. But I'm sure you will also know, and I don't have to go into the details, that there's an ex-combatant in Mozambique. He has a good track record, but unfortunately he's committed his crimes in South Africa. And many of these crimes quite abhorrent, and I can only hope that despite having consolidated all these offences, he will be found guilty so that we can dispatch him to Ebongweni as soon as possible, Mr. Chair. I'm going to ask Mr. Darman to respond to the issue of the kind of technology that we are currently using and at least talking we can use.
Yeah, there's some things. The technology strategies that we have currently applied, I'm saying we haven't done a proper audit on that, and in the department we don't have capacity also to do that. So we have requested the CSIR to do an audit on the systems that we have currently in place, and then to analyze the gaps in that and come up with proposals to the department. What other technologies can be applied to assist us in different security threats that the department is facing? So in the department we don't have that, and I think CSIR is not a profitable organization. They will, in terms of that advice, it will not be a costly exercise to give that assistance to the department. So we are having a memorandum of agreement signed, and we are developing specifications around areas that we need their assistance in future, and then we can come up with a better improved plan in addressing the gaps within the departments.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Any closing remarks, Commissioner?
Honourable Chair, Mr. Minister, Deputy Minister, Members. I really want to extend my gratitude to the members of the committee and yourself. For the frank and open way that you allowed us to ask, to answer the questions, but also where we've not been able to allow us to come back to you. And I trust my team will pick up on some of that areas where further information is required. But we're always willing to appear before you and engage. So thank you on behalf of my colleagues.
Minister.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I must also emphasize my gratitude to the Portfolio Committee. I know it's not every day that the Portfolio Committee has to be seeing the face of the Minister all the time, but because we would want to have this relationship quite cemented and firmly established, that is why in most cases we would divide ourselves between the Deputy Minister and myself. If there is a Cabinet Committee meeting, we will make a chance to go there so that one of us can be with the team to show the kind of respect we have for the oversight role that committees have to play on the work that we do, but also with some good suggestions adding value to the work that we do and making sure that it keeps us on the straight and narrow and we can account for the policies of the department, for the policies of the ruling party, as well as to account to Parliament for the taxpayers' money that we are using. So I'm quite grateful that we had this discussion, and I hope the next time we come back we'll be talking now that 7-day establishment really running, because it's to the benefit of everybody. And those professionals that we don't have, having them in the department and being able to lift this department up to a level where we can all be proud of. On one hand, to meet core business of rehabilitation, on the other, not being naive about the fact that some of the criminals that we are looking after are dangerous criminals. And those should be treated as such.
not like TV news and allowed to be treated as such, because he's a criminal. So the sooner also the state can finish the Mate case, the better. It's training us to be looking after an awaiting trial detainee who is causing so much waste. We've got to finalize it as government, justice system, and then take him to where he belongs, Ebongweni, Kokstad. Then we can breathe a little bit better, knowing that we're dealing, therefore, with ordinary people, not extraordinary criminals, ordinary people who should be able to and make sure that we succeed in doing that. There will be this health check here and there, but you will have to bear with us as a department that is in its developmental, transformational stage. We will eventually, with your assistance of the members and yourself, get there. Thank you very much.
Very much, Minister. Thank you, Commissioner. No, I must say that it was a very good briefing. Very relaxed. You were answering questions, but outstanding questions, as you have said. A lot of outstanding questions. And, I think Cindy has noted all the outstanding questions. Yes. I'm also very much happy to hear the issue of Kokstad, that people are going to, just dangerous criminals are going to be housed there. It's true that that is the place where they belong. Member, thank you very much for participating. I can see that there was a lot of preparation in preparing for this meeting. But I think that as a committee, the commissioner also mentioned this point. We are dealing as a portfolio committee with the oversight of this department, monitor each and everything that the department is doing. Now, it can't be an open-ended issue when we are dealing with outstanding matters. You are having a responsibility as the accounting officer to put pressure on the people working under you. You see, in your annual report, it's a matter of suspension, the number of people suspended, 483. Number of people with suspension and exceeded 30 days, what? An amount of 9.7 million rand. Is it in paid? And you mentioned it. Commissioner, you know, one thing that I'm very much happy and proud of, you are a very honest and open person, and it makes things very easy. You have helped us even to break down and say what is the cost of the other prisons, the people on suspension. Now, Commissioner, to help you further, I think that we must give time frame as well as this committee for you to go to the people on the ground so that they can speed up this issue. We can't have it when we come back to deal with the new budget and sit with 9.7 million rand. I think that we must give, as this committee must give time frames to say, including the issue of on, to give you at least 30, 90 days, 3 months, to say, come and report back to this committee on the suspension, whatever is outstanding, so that we must look into. I'm not saying that you are going to finalize each and everything, but come back and report to us the progress in all this. It's a lot of taxpayers' money that we are paying for people sitting at home. doing absolutely nothing. Now, we are having a responsibility as this portfolio committee to look after the spending of the budget. But I can tell you, Commissioner, if that thing is not coming by the end of February, then we must, I will talk to this portfolio committee to really consider it very serious that we must ask questions about supporting the new budget, because outstanding issues have not yet been answered. I'm saying that we must take it very serious that this 9.7 million people who suspended, you must deal with it. I can see that you are very serious and your team are very serious in handling it. And I know that you are capable enough in dealing with this. But I think that in each and everything that we are doing in this committee, we must have time frame and not leave this thing open-ended, so that people must think, no, they will come back again and brief the committee again. 2.5 years down the line, the one issue is still there. I understand we are not going into a criminal matter where the police are investigating. We can't go in there. But when it comes to disciplinary issues, then I'm saying that let us pick that thing up with the disciplinary hearing and complete it, finalize it, and it's a thing of the past. But when there's a criminal issue that is hanging, we understand that you can't go in there. But disciplinary matters. You know that Hopku raised this issue there in the annual report, in the public hearing, to say some of their members are sitting now for 2.5 years on suspension, getting money for free. Commissioner, I am saying that I know very well that you and your team are very capable in doing this and reporting back on this on the end of February next year to say this is how far we went with this in investigation. But I am saying as well that we can't, as a portfolio committee, go on and on and not saying that now the buck stops here, and we must have now finality on this matter. I hope that Commissioner, you will carry it through to the people on the ground, all the area. In this area, or regional commissioner, to let them know what we are saying. End of February, we want a report back on all the suspension. We can't spend 9.7 million rand, and people are sitting at home. But let me invite all of you to for lunch. There's lunch outside. And thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.